Luke, it was a couple of years ago that I got this idea to take up acting, and I got into a musical as my opening foray. I auditioned and was cast into two roles into a musical called Into the Woods.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, it was quite the experience.
This is before you started, this is before you took on your role as Satan in the church musical.
Lucifer. Thank you. But yes. And it was actually around the same time, but it was a proper production. It was like 14 showings. It was an intense thing. I loved it. It was an incredible experience. And I was delighted to find that our guest today is a fan of Into the Woods. Leslie, you on your blog, you called it out as one of your favorite musical. So that already puts you in really good standing in my regard.
That's crazy. I have no idea what I read on my blog. But yeah, that's... Oh, when you started, I was like, that's my favorite musical. Like, that's so cool. I wasn't expecting you to link it to me. So, yeah, nice one.
I took on... And actually, in your blog post, you embedded a YouTube video of a performance. That is the performance that I actually studied for the musical. It's the reference that the cast used.
Must have been the first one.
It's like one of the
original?
Older ones.
It's,
yeah. I had so much fun doing that, and was like, I would be sitting working on WordPress stuff during rehearsals because it was like hours and hours every day. So I'd be sitting there with my laptop, like working on stuff, and it was an incredible experience. So that was a happy reference. Leslie, welcome to this episode of Crossword. We're excited to have you. For those who haven't had the pleasure of reading your blog. Or seeing what you've been doing in the space for some time, would you mind just giving us a bit of background on yourself? How did you come into this WordPress world?
Now I need to know what role you played in Into the Woods.
I played two roles, actually. I played two roles. I played the steward and the old man. So fairly simple rules. Yeah. So they let, which was a big deal for me. And it was also my first time. There's a solo that the old man does at the end. So I didn't have any formal musical training. I got really fortunate to be with a cast that was quite talented. So I was by far the least experienced, but I just really poured myself into it. And it was an incredible experience. So back to you.
That's so cool. Yeah, I started on WordPress, I want to say maybe 2016, something like that, 2015, 2016. As most people start, I was looking for a cheap way to build a website. At the time, I think it must have been... So I was doing two things. I was helping a friend with their beer brewery business.
Nice.
And I was also trying to start like a video agency. And so the beer brewery ended up on Shopify and my video agency website ended up on WordPress. So I kind of got a chance to play with the two. And I guess it's almost 10 years now, but I still distinctly remember how, like, what my experience was using WordPress. And I think that has kind of shaped a lot of my approach to building stuff till this day. I started, my first introduction to WordPress was around 2016, building my video agency. And then that kind of turned into a marketing agency and a design agency. And, you know, with small businesses, you kind of have to do it all. And so I built websites for clients over time. And it kind of got to the point where I was sick of having clients. And I always thought about building software products. And I've spoken to a lot of agency people. And I think that's kind of like a common thing that's they common all dream
refrain.
About.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're all sick of their clients.
Yeah. So the harsh way to say it is I fired my clients. In 2019, like I just kind of got rid of most of them and started figuring out this plugin business. And I think it took us till about mid to late 2020 to launch our first one, which was Newsletter Glue. And that has a whole like story in and of itself. But yeah, now in 2025, we are on to our second plugin business, which is EventKoi, which will be launching soon, fingers crossed.
I'm really keen to dive into EventKoi and some of your product thinking. But I saw that Newsletter Glue, it was acquired. So congratulations.
Thanks.
Yeah. Would you tell us a little about that story? Like, how did you land Newsletter Glue to that point?
How did we sell it?
No, like more of the journey, because you were working hard on Newsletter Glue for quite a few years, right? Like that's, even if you go to leslie.pizza today, it says working on Newsletter Glue. That's been your sort of main focus for a long time, and was how I first came across your work. So yeah, for those who don't know, maybe just a little bit of that journey of creating the product, you know, focusing on it for years, and then ultimately selling it.
Yeah, so I guess the medium length story is that we started in 2020. That must have been like at the start of COVID as well. And so everyone was online. And I think we benefited a lot from that. Newsletter Glue started as a pivot from a membership plugin that we were trying to build. And that didn't go so well because we were new players in an established niche. So it was hard to even get people to use the free version. Mm. So we pivoted to Newsletter Glue, which was kind of like a much smaller product, but because there weren't many people using it, it became easier to convince the people who needed such a feature to try us because there weren't many options around. And I think, as I said, like it was kind of during the pandemic, and that helped a lot with conversion, because I'm over here in Singapore and my co-founder Ahmed is in Egypt, and you know, we weren't able to go to WordCamp US or WordCamp EU, which is happening right now, and I think having a lot of things online really benefited us. So I managed to attend WordCamp US and give a talk there, but like, you know, I was doing it from Singapore, which is definitely not something I can do right now. So that happened. One thing I also wanted to mention is, again, because of the pandemic, everyone was online a lot. And I think that allowed me to build a lot of relationships with people, with plugin owners, agency owners from the US and Europe, which were our two main countries, areas, regions that people bought us from. So I don't think that I would have been able to do that now, because everyone's much more in, you know, meeting face to face. So then we built a new set of glue, and that was a huge learning lesson for me as well.
Leslie, I want to just touch on that for just a moment, because it's an interesting contrast that's just now clicking for me. Yeah, COVID gave us this opportunity where suddenly there was this we're not able to meet face to face. And what's occurring to me is, with all this focus on AI now, I would argue that there is actually something like prickling up here around face to face becoming more valuable again. Because of this, like, how do you know what's real? Like, kind of what's not? Like, there's this, it's an interesting contrast in timing here, where we had this worldwide thing where we couldn't spend time in person. And at least as I've been thinking about observing, it's like, it feels like there's a near-term future where there's a greater emphasis being placed on in person again, which has its benefits, but also trade-offs for those of us who've benefited so much from things like being accessible and online.
Yeah, I mean, couldn't put it better myself.
I'm curious to see. Yeah,
I do think that yes, there's like people appreciate the in real life part more, but I think there's also like a, you know, convenience thing that AI provides, and also, you know, Zooms and Riverside provides, that once you have that, it's also hard to go back. Yeah, it's like a Pandora's box thing, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so, and I'm curious for a bit more context on this, going into Newsletter Glue, what prompted you to say, hey, I'm going to make a product? Like, you mentioned you had that agency's background where you're like, you fired your clients, but it feels that, did you go into it with your eyes wide open about like, it's going to be difficult? Or like, I guess, what was the sentiment going into that early on? Was it just that you wanted something different than the agency work? When I read some of your writings now, it feels like it at least feels like you know what you're doing in that you're also honest about not knowing, where you're trying to figure things out. But when you started on that product journey with the membership and then into Newsletter Glue, I guess, did you have anything else that informed that? Like, had you had product experience prior, or was it very much like learning from the ground up?
Yeah, it was very much learning from the ground up. Sheer hubris. Didn't know anything about anything. I thought that I knew about marketing, but as it turns out, my background before running my own agency business was I had worked at ad agencies for a number of years, and that was always working on large global brands. So I thought that I knew how marketing is done. But it turns out that doing marketing for a large global brand is very different from doing marketing for a small startup when nobody knows you. And I'd argue that you actually learn a lot more about marketing when you're doing a small startup, because on the larger scale, like, you're just kind of keeping the ship moving in the right direction. But building the ship from the ground up is a whole other story. And it requires you to know, you know, like, you have to make the strategic decisions. The strategic decisions weren't made for you by some CMO 10 years ago that you're just kind of like running the playbook for. Yeah, so, you know, even the thing that I thought I knew turned out to not really even be that helpful. And so, like, we started in 2020. I didn't know anything about marketing, turns out. Didn't know anything about design. Didn't know anything about product management. And those are all kind of skills that I've had to learn and teach myself over the years. And I think, in particular, product management, my lack of product management skills were frustrating for a bit when we first started working together, because I, you know, I'd be kind of doing the most annoying random, you know, like, oh, hey, let's build this, hey, let's build that, and like with no kind of reason, like, other than it, you know, I think people will like it. So I like to say that I've come a long way since then and am now a less annoying product person.
So you launched this product and you built it up. You learned how to market it. You got more and more downloads, more and more sales. And then at some point, you made a decision to pass it on to some new owners. What was the thinking that led you towards, hey, I think it's time to move on?
So we've been building Event Koi for about just under 6 months now, or around 6 months. And it was getting harder and harder to manage the two, because we'd be, you know, dealing with support requests, building new features, and then at the same time trying to build an entirely new product. And we're a small team. It's always kind of been me and Ahmed, and then we have an additional developer who works like on a contract basis part-time with us, and then also a support person, and that's kind of always been about it. So juggling the two got more and more difficult. So I think it kind of reached a tipping point early this year where I was like, I can't do it anymore. You know, it's it wasn't even like number of hours that we were working. It was just like the mental load and the context switching.
Yeah.
So I decided to pull the trigger this year and send it off.
Okay. So I want to ask about Eventkoi. When I first saw that you were working on it, I had a mix of like different feelings and thoughts that sort of went through my head. I'm like, first off, like an event plugin, like, don't we have enough of these? It would be, I think I'd feel similar if someone was like, I'm going to make a forms plugin. Like, why are you doing that? But then I was like, well, but if Leslie's working on it, she's going to do a good job. Like it's going to be some proper. So it made me like intrigued. And then when I actually started playing with the demo of it, I was like, oh, wow. There's some things about this. It's still early, but even in just some of the early experiments with the UI, I was feeling this like, ooh, there's some real thought and care and experience and skill that's already showing up to me as someone like experimenting with it. But I'd love to hear a bit more about the like why events of all the things that you could do, like what prompted you to say, okay, you know what? We've had a couple of years of experience. We've learned some new skills. I guess I'm interested in two parts. What motivated you to say, we're going to do something else in the WordPress space? Like we're going to make another product and then why events?
So one of the reasons is actually motivated by something we've talked about or you've like a concept. And I'm going to attribute it to you, Jonathan.
If it's good, thank you. We'll see.
That's the concept of platform plugins versus tool plugins. And I think this was something that we kind of always found ourselves, like we kind of painted ourselves into a corner with Newsletter Glue, which was kind of like a tool plugin masquerading as a platform plugin.
Yeah.
We were higher priced and we inevitably became one of the more important plugins for the publishers that used us.
Yep.
Just because
you did carve out a niche for it. Yeah.
Yeah. By the time a publisher wanted to use us, they would have a large newsletter function in their company, and so we'd be kind of like a core piece of that puzzle. So it kind of felt like we were a platform plugin. But we weren't because there wasn't really any way to integrate with us. We tried for like a number of years because we have so many friends and partners in the WordPress world. But just the nature of how it works. So Newsletter Glue connects email platforms like MailChimp into WordPress and lets you use the block editor as like the newsletter writer. So inevitably when people wanted to connect to us, it actually makes more sense to connect directly to MailChimp because there's like kind of no piece that made sense for them to connect, plug into us rather than plug into MailChimp. And so when we were building when we were looking for a new plugin to build, we knew that we would definitely want to be a platform plugin because it just allowed so many more marketing opportunities, partnership opportunities,
monetization opportunities.
You could argue that tool plugins can be like well monetized as well, right? Like I would call like Yoast a tool plugin, and they're like famously one of the larger well monetized plugins out there.
When I first started talking about this, I described it as like an ecosystem plugin. And one of the key hallmarks is this idea that you also have indirect monetization available through like, so in order to meet the test, it has to introduce a suite of functionality. So events is a good example. Like it adds events to WordPress, right? It needs to have an integration layer, like a method for others to extend it. Like someone else should be able to go into it and create another business like within what you're building, right? Something that takes it further, has new functionality. And the third piece, which is where I think a lot of folks don't put much energy, is what I described as this intentional shaping of an ecosystem where you're like, you want to make sure that people who are building with you, because there's folks like, I would argue, like Gravity Forms, for instance, unintentionally became an ecosystem plugin and has a bunch of folks who've built up around it. And whereas the idea is to intentionally say, okay, how do we make sure that people are building successful businesses within this ecosystem that we're curating and shaping and influencing over time, which can then lead to indirect monetization, right? Like you could make money in different ways than just selling a piece of software.
Yeah. Yes. Copy and paste. Exactly that.
Big Scoots are a managed WordPress hosting company. And if you're anything like me, you already use a managed WordPress hosting company. Why do you need a new one? Well, I decided to try it out for myself to try to help answer that question. Their support was amazing. I know everybody says that, but I really like chat-based support and they really nailed it. I also loved their Cloudflare integration directly in my Big Scoots dashboard. And the SSH and WP CLI was a breeze to set up and use. I was up and running with WP CLI in less than a minute. If you want to try out Big Scoots, you can get 98% off your first 2 months if you sign up for a managed hosting plan. Just use the word crossword at checkout. Go to bigscoots.com/crossword, bigscoots.com/crossword for 98% off your first 2 months.
All right, so let me talk about a idea that I've been banging on about for a little while, which is WordPress plugins that feel like they belong in WordPress, that don't completely reinvent the UI. And that's one of the things I always look for when I'm trying out a new plugin. And something interesting happened when I looked at Eventkoi. And what I noticed was that Eventkoi does kind of reinvent the WordPress UI, at least sort of there's a bit of a redesign, but it's still fundamentally the same thing, right? It still uses common things like list tables. I'd say it's like a fresh splash of paint on top of WordPress that looks fantastic and feels like fundamentally somehow native, even though it's not. And so my question, like, really, Leslie, is like, how did you arrive here? How did you arrive at this design point? And do you think that there's a design system here that could then actually be implemented by other plugins?
Let me answer the second question first. So we actually thought about building kind of like a design system for plugins and trying to sell that. Kind of like Tailwind UI and how they sell their design system. But I think we figured that there wasn't, but you couldn't monetize it that much because the audience is quite niche and I'm not sure how much they would be willing to pay. If they're selling plugins for, $49 a year or $99 a year, how much are they going to be willing to pay for a design system that allows them to do that? So we dropped that idea, but I still think it's a fantastic idea. And if someone wants to do that, they should totally do that. So the first question, I think that's just like people build the things that are in their heads. And I think what you're seeing is like the manifestation of how me and Ahmed think about WordPress and plugins. So I think you're right, and people have pointed that out, that Eventkoi has a completely different UI to WordPress. And frankly, for me, like, I did that because I feel like WordPress feels, it itself could use a fresh coat of paint.
Bit stale.
And I felt that my first experience using WordPress in 2016, like I still remember that, all my impressions of WordPress from then. And I remember thinking in 2016 that it looked kind of old and it needed, some work then. And that's 10 years ago.
Mm.
So I just wanted to build something clean and fast. And we'd already been experimenting with React with newsletter glue. And once you kind of get used to that snappiness of everything, it's hard to go back to loading every single page. And then I think the other thing is also just there were design things that we wanted to do, which WordPress didn't really allow you to do, like certain mm-hmm. things, right? And I feel like you see it sometimes with some plugins where they're like 90% WordPress and then 10% like random UI element because WordPress doesn't have it. And I find like I want it all to look kind of comprehensive. So yeah. For me, it's like because of that, I'd rather do like a whole new thing. And then so that's the design part. But I think for me and Agmit, like both of us, like in our heads, like the architecture is still very like it's still the WordPress architecture because that's like how we view WordPress, how we view, you know, how the plugin should work inside of WordPress. And then so that's kind of how you get that thing that you were talking about, Luke, where like it looks not from WordPress, but then it feels and like the flows, like the processes, the workflows, the step-by-step all feels like WordPress because like the underlying architecture is still built like a WordPress plugin, like a WordPress thing.
Yeah. I wish that the entire WordPress admin looked a lot more like Eventquote. It looks fantastic. And I understand what you're saying about not wanting to redesign individual or design your own individual components. I love that too, that what you said earlier about how you sort of design what's in your head. And I think we must see this a lot in WordPress where people come from different space, right? Like they're doing some sort of SaaS and then they think, oh, I'll pop my SaaS in WordPress. And all they do is they create a new admin page and that admin page then just looks exactly like their SaaS. It doesn't look like it belongs in WordPress. And so because you and Amit are fundamentally WordPress people, you think in terms of WordPress. I think that that really comes across. It's really nicely done. I wanted to ask you also about marketing. You said you had some marketing background that may or may not apply. I always find it really hard when it comes to marketing my plugins. There's the whole like, do you put it for free on the repo or not? And then try to do this sort of upsell thing. There's like, it feels like for software, it's either like Facebook, Google Ads or social media marketing. And I'm not on Facebook. I'm not on social media. I don't even have a Google account. And so like, how do you do it? How can you like stay, is it possible to live a life free from social media and also somehow market your software?
And by the way, before you answer that, Leslie, I think this is all just a plot for Luke to get out of having to promote the crossword episodes because he's like, oh, sorry, I don't have any followers.
I shared it on LinkedIn. Yeah, I put it on LinkedIn.
I guess that counts for something. Please, Leslie.
And did you hate yourself, Luke, when you did that?
No, I don't mind. I don't mind because everybody's promoting everything on LinkedIn. That's all it's for, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I don't know. So I think with what I found with Use as a Glue, when we started out, the idea was to build, a Twitter following and somehow get customers from there. And I very quickly found out that that's not really how it works. So the people that are on Twitter are like fellow WordPress community people, fellow WordPress plugin business owners, developers, designers. And so what I kind of stumbled into was realizing that social media, or at least Twitter, was a way to build relationships with the WordPress community who would then in turn share it with potential customers via their blogs or their newsletters and so on and so forth. So that's kind of the playbook that I'm hoping to run this time around as well with Eventkoi. Build up V2B relationships basically and hope that that kind of trickles down.
Right. It's like an indirect word of mouth sort of thing. I guess WordCamps must play a big part of that too. I know that we met at a WordCamp And subsequently, I began telling people about newsletter glue.
Hey, there you go. Thanks. Yeah, I guess that is kind of the way that it works. I should be better at WordCamps, but honestly, after the pandemic and being at home for so long, it's like being at a conference feels really overwhelming, and I don't love sitting. I don't love planning, and like planning a meetings for a conference is like not my favorite thing, and so I tend to just go and drift around and regret not spending my time more efficiently.
Conferences aren't for efficient time. There's different methodologies, but I'm also of the, I don't like to plan things out. I don't know. It's just this, I don't like a schedule telling me what to do for something. But, so Leslie, I'm curious, you're working on Eventkoi now. If anyone who's interested, they can go check out the demo. They can play with it. It's up on InstaWP. What can you tell us about the current plans and intentions? You've been fairly public up on Twitter about it, but from this point in time, how are you feeling about the next couple of months? Do you have any targets or milestones in mind for like when it's going to be released? How are you currently thinking about pricing? And drawing from one of your recent blog posts, you've given some pretty helpful guidance on how to think about pricing, which is don't overthink it. So what are you currently thinking?
I think with building something new and launching something new, it's hard to have a super rigid timeline, because you never know what's going to change. And as you talk to people, new information comes up, and then that causes you to change direction, so on and so forth. So right now, we're hoping to launch in the first week of July. But again, things could change from there. But hopefully in July, that's kind of what we're hoping for. As an example of something that changed a lot, when we first started talking about Eventkoi, and I got a handful of people using it, I want to say half the people immediately looked for tickets. How do I buy tickets to an event? And that doesn't exist yet. Those people did it via screen recordings, which was really helpful for me to kind of see people wandering around the plugin and talking through and talking out loud. And that was seeing them wander around and being like, where's tickets? Where's tickets? Is it me? Is it the plugin? Do you not have it yet? Or am I just not looking for it in the right places? So I was like, oh, okay, we obviously have to build tickets now. And then that led us down a tickets rabbit hole for 3 months, not having done
payment
any
processes
stuff before.
Yeah.
And 3 months in, I was like, okay, if we continue down this path, we will not launch until the end of the year. And so we had to, put tickets aside. We built half of it, also knowing that the last probably 20% would be the, take as long as the first 80%. So we'd already built half of it. And I was like, okay, we gotta stop. And instead we chose to build out our event settings. So our event settings now, I think, are great. Just as robust as the more established event plugins out there. So we've got standard events, recurring events, a whole bunch of stuff there. And so we've chosen to do that instead and build that out and launch based on that first. And then hopefully maybe end of the year, start tackling tickets again.
You also have options for integrating with other ticketing platforms like Humanitix and whatever WordCamp uses, or that's a built-in one, right?
Yeah, that's a separate plugin.
Yeah.
So how are you thinking about pricing? And connected to that, I'd love to hear your current thoughts on if you're building this as an ecosystem, How are you thinking from the outset about the role that like opening it for others would play? Where does that fit into some of the initial efforts and conversations that I can imagine you could already be having with folks?
So pricing, like you've mentioned, I'm not overthinking it, and I haven't really thought about it. I think it would be like a day or two worth of like Googling to see what other event plugins are charging, and then, you know, just being like somewhere in the middle of that, and trying to make it worthwhile for people who are purchasing a new plugin to the scene. So, you know, we obviously can't charge the same price as an established plugin because we don't have as many features. It's probably not going to be as stable. Here's the starting price that makes sense.
You could tap into that hubris that you had at the beginning. Just double the price of what was out there. It's a funny thing, right? You never know how it can work, but it sounds like you're taking a sensible approach.
Yeah, I mean, I'm taking the approach that you can change your plugin pricing, you know, every other day when you're new, because you don't have that much traffic, nobody knows you, and everyone understands that you're just starting. So honestly, I don't think the pricing on day one matters that much. I could change it on day two, I could change it on day three. So it's more like putting it out there and getting feedback. I think that's always the most important thing. So this is a slight sidetrack, but I think worth talking about. I see launching as like a series of like taking your thing to market. And in my case, to market is just posting on Twitter and posting in Slack channels. Yeah. And what you really want is just like other people other than yourself to look at the plugin and give you their feedback with fresh eyes. And the same goes for pricing, right? So like I probably just post it, and you know, if someone comments and says it's too expensive or too cheap, or I was willing to pay twice the price, then that kind of gives me more information to then change the pricing.
What about the model? What about the business model when you're going into it? Are you thinking, more the question is, how do you think about it? Because, you know, there are plenty of freemium plugins and premium plugins, and there's plugins that monetize through third-party add-on marketplaces and through payment gateways. What are you thinking for EventCoy and why?
Haven't super thought about it. We're still really early days, and I think kind of the business model will show itself over time. With tickets, we're hoping to do some kind of, I think what's common is a 2% cut. So we're hoping to do that. I know some potential customers really don't like that, but it seems like that's kind of the norm now in the plugin world. So we'll probably do that. Do some partnerships with people, affiliates, nothing. Not trying to reinvent the wheel here.
What I'm going to be curious about, because it's not standing out to me clearly yet. I would have taken ticketing as an example of something that might have been a go-to for a third party to be building, or to have multiple ticketing solutions, like within the context of you building out an ecosystem, right? So that's an interesting one to me. If I were to just take a guess, it would have been like, there'd be a couple of different ticketing options that had specialization and different like sub areas of usage. And yes, you could build a native solution, but maybe there's someone who's better suited to be working on that in parallel. I'm curious about the first couple of, what are the first couple of things that you'd anticipate a third-party developer coming in and say, hey, you know what, I want to build in the EventCoy ecosystem? That I think that's an interesting opportunity that you have to shape and seed some of those initial forays. And
I've already got ideas, Jonathan. But yeah, let's hear them, Leslie.
I don't know. I think it's all fine and well for me to say what I think people should build, but at the end of the day, it's also, you know, who who wants to build, and like, you know, the person that, that might build on Event Koi might, you know, be, might have an e-commerce background and might want to build this ticketing thing, but they might not. Maybe they have an email background and they want to build, you know, an email add-on, or maybe they have, you know, some other thing. So it's kind of hard for me to say what I think other people should build, just because I think people kind of come into things with their own biases and their own preferences, which is, you know, totally cool and what I'd love to see. I'm also like, I don't know if this is sabotaging myself, but I imagine it will take a while for the plugin to be big enough and stable enough that people feel like they can earn money on top of it. Because, you know, why build something, why spend, you know, weeks or months building add-on to a new plugin when they can just go build an add-on to Gravity Forms, right? Like, if I were trying to make that decision, I wouldn't build on us. I would build on something more.
Really? No, the answer is because it was built by Leslie and Amit. Like, that's that's a good answer. No, for real. I think you back people in the space. That's what you do. But another big answer could be because you have put a lot of thought into promotion and, you know, cross promotion and marketplace opportunities and that sort of thing. I don't know. Is that something you've been thinking about at all?
Yeah, for sure. I think a huge part of our success is going to come down to integrations and partnerships. Working with, you know, existing plugin owners and having really, really nice tight integrations that really make sense. And feel really seamless. I think, I'm hoping that's kind of how we grow, actually.
What I think is going to be interesting too, Leslie, is I like the thought process of, yeah, you don't know what people are going to do. You don't want to presume, and you don't want to fix the constraints. I think, at least in my experience, though, sometimes people struggle with like a lack of imagination, and there's something that I'm interested in seeing of like, what does it look like for someone creating an ecosystem plugin to like put the, cause you're going to come up with ideas, like almost like put the ideas out there and make an explicit invitation where it's like, hey, this is a friendly space. Like, we want to work with you. Here's the ideas that we have so far that we haven't gotten to yet. If any of these trigger something for you, and if you got other ideas, reach out. Like, we, to sort of put a shingle out there that says we are consciously wanting to create an environment where others can succeed in, and we can share in that success together and help support. And that's something I haven't seen done much of. I think people get there eventually. And I think that there's something to be said about starting with that intentionality of saying, this is the direction we want to go. Here's what we have to offer so far, our thoughts and ideas, and just make that more direct invitation, which I think it sounds like you're already doing implicitly. Yeah. And it'd be interesting to see it just be done more explicit.
Leslie, we should have known better than to get Jonathan started on ecosystem thinking.
I love talking to him about it.
Well, we're excited to see what you actually do with this. And maybe Luke will be one of the early contributors to building things within Event Koi. Leslie, please go ahead.
Sorry, let me just... I think one of the, you know, even though we don't necessarily have a laundry list of features we'd love people to build on top of our plugin yet, I think we've gone into it on day one with that's kind of the intention. Like, you know, WordPress, one of the key things about WordPress is its extensibility. And so, you know, when we built Event Koi, you know, with 1,001 different hooks, with, you know, everything like code that's like easy to extend, easy to read, easy to understand. So we're hoping like when we do get to the point where we're like, yes, come, please build on us. We are super excited to have you. You know, it's not going to be, oh, you know, crap, now we have to go back and make sure our code, you know, makes sense. We have to build all this stuff in, you know, like we already have an API, for example. So yeah, like, even if right now my lack of confidence is saying, you know, I'm not sure that we're big enough yet to make it make sense for someone who wants to build on top of us, the code is already there. So if you wanted to do it, you know.
Yeah, that's another
talk
great.
To me and, like, we're super ready.
That's another big, big reason why a developer might choose to build on top of EventCoy as opposed to a different events plugin that maybe is more established. It's just a beautiful code base. You want to have fun writing the product that you're building. And I guess the other thing also would be a commitment to backwards compatibility.
Yep. Leslie, as we're about to...
Hold on. Yeah. I want to hear what Leslie has to say about that.
Yeah, well, go ahead.
So that's tough, isn't it? It's tough when you're launching a brand new plugin, and on the one hand, you want to encourage people to build on top of it, but on the other hand, you know you're going to be making mistakes, and you know that some things will need to be completely refactored. You've probably already rebuilt the plugin twice. If you build anything like me, how are you thinking about that sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, it's just going to be like, sorry.
Version two.
Which comes back to why it's like hard for me to, at this point, encourage people to start building on us. Also because like we ourselves don't know what's going to be like something that we want to keep in our core plugin versus something that we encourage other people to build because we don't want to build, right? Because I think Shopify is famous for that, right? Like, you know, they have big apps that are really successful, and then Shopify says, oh, we're building that exact feature, and then it kills the app overnight. Yes. And I think a bunch of plugins, I think Gravity is one of them, and I'm forgetting the course plugin. LearnDash is another of them. Like, I don't think there's been like any dramas around it, but I think it's something that's kind of talked about occasionally within the Facebook groups, within their respective Facebook groups. Like, you know, should I build this add-on? I'm not sure if, you know, Gravity or LearnDash is going to build it in the future, and it kind of always juggling that. So I think on our side, I'd love to kind of have a better grip on these are the key features that we can't afford to
this is the core.
So much.
Yeah.
Versus like, hey, we're never going to build, you know, 500 patterns for event design templates. So like, please feel free to do that.
Yeah, and I would argue it's going to be interesting to see, and this will take some time to evolve, but the clearer you are in the core business and like how monetization works, I think it's going to make some of those decisions easier, where it's like, okay, we know how we do this or how we don't, where, you know, what are our core principles here and what are the things that are adjacent. Leslie, you've been involved in Ultimate Frisbee professionally for quite some time. I think several decades at this point. So you have this, for those who don't know, I think I'd leave it to you to describe better, but it's a professional sport and you're involved at high levels. How, if at all, has that affected, that background affected your work building products in the WordPress space?
Sadly, I don't think Frisbee is super professional. I think there might be some leagues in the US that are trying to make a go of it.
There are. That's how I've heard of it. I heard of that before I knew that you had any involvement in it.
Yeah, but so I think my involvement is very much unprofessional, just enthusiastic amateur. I think I'm not sure how much it's affected how I run my business, but maybe it's probably given me confidence in, you know, certain things, like training hard at Frisbee, learning how to learn, I would say, has been a huge thing that I got from playing Frisbee. When I started, there weren't much in the way of coaches. If you were on a team with a coach, you were quite lucky. Usually it's player coaches. And so you kind of have to spend a lot of time learning for yourself. There isn't someone that's dedicated to giving you feedback. And we spend a lot of time, for example, also doing all the admin to travel to a tournament. So we don't have team managers, or if the team manager exists, it's going to be a player team manager. And so we have to figure all of that out. And so learning how to do admin and like get a whole bunch of, you know, 20 something players off into a tournament, get jerseys, get hotels, get cars, all that stuff. Like, learning how to get all of that off the ground is, I think, very helpful for learning how to do anything in the world. And it gives you confidence. Like, once you're able to do that, it gives you confidence that you're able to, you know, do more things, or like, you know, you're confident in yourself. And I think that has helped me quite a bit. And also, yeah, I mean, I think that I was a bratty kid. And when I stepped up into leadership roles in Frisbee, it forced me to be less bratty, because I realized, oh, I can't like influence people, and I can't inspire people, and I can't teach people and coach people and, you know, do all these things, because I'm too busy being selfish and like wanting things to go my way, and that's not how things work. Yeah, so I learned a lot of life lessons and had a lot of personal growth through Frisbee, and I'm sure a lot of that has influenced the way I now operate my business.
I'm sure that a lot of the very best product owners and business builders were brats as kids. Leslie, thank you so much for coming on Crossword. Could you tell people where to find you and where to find out more about EventKoi?
Yeah, I am on Twitter at Leslie, Lesley underscore pizza. And you can try out the latest version of EventKoi at eventkoi.com, EventKoi.com.